Welcome to Lectionary at Lunch. I'm Dr. David Adams, and this week we will be examining, as our Old Testament lesson, Deuteronomy chapter 30, verses 15 to 20. Our text this week is the end of the exhortation of Moses to the people of Israel as he prepares them for crossing the Jordan River into the land that God had promised them. By challenging them and us to choose life, Moses both reminds us of what our calling to be the people of God entails and encourages us to allow the light of God to shine through us and enlighten the darkness of the world of death. So we turn now to Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 15. Ra'eh nathati lefanecha hayom et hachayim wa et hatov wa et hamaweth Wa'eth hara. Look here. I set before you today life and that which is good, or death and that which is evil. The passage begins with the imperative of the verb ra'ah, to see. But the imperative here is not to be taken as a literal command to look at something, but it's rather an example of what grammarians might describe as the rhetorical use of the word. The purpose of this rhetorical use of the word look is to get the reader, or the hearer, to focus his attention on what is about to be said. This kind of rhetorical use of the imperative is quite common in biblical Hebrew. Moses offers Israel a stark choice in the words, I set before you today. The starkness of this choice is highlighted by the abrupt phraseology of the Hebrew, which has two pairs of objects simply and laconically stated without any kind of embellishment. On one hand, we have life and that which is good. On the other hand, death and that which is evil. While these four pairs are joined by the simple conjunction and in Hebrew, the context makes it clear that we have alternative pairs. Verse 16. The beginning of the next verse continues this thought, but with some perceived difficulties at the beginning of the verse that cause problems for translators. So we'll take this one phrase at a time. Eth anoki matzaoka hayom la'ahava eth Yahweh Elohecha. The verse begins with the relative pronoun asher. The difficulty here is how to connect this to the preceding sentence. One approach is reflected by the Septuagint, the Greek translation from the intertestamental period. As the textual apparatus of Biblica Hebraica Stuttgartensia, BHS, points out, the Septuagint begins the verse by adding a phrase, Es akuses tas intolas kuriu to thiu su, implying that something has dropped out, the equivalent of the Hebrew phrase im tesha el mitzoth Yahweh Elohecha. A number of English translations follow this suggestion by translating something like, if you obey the commands of the Lord your God, and then picking up the relative pronoun asher and continuing by translating something like, which I'm commanding you today to love the Lord your God. Now, while that works, though it's a little clumsy in the way that it handles that last phrase, to love the Lord your God, it is certainly not necessary in order to make sense of the text. I prefer to read the text just as it stands, and to take the relative clause as an example of putting the object of the verb first. When translating, what I am commanding you today is to love the Lord your God. This makes perfect sense of the text as it stands, and it renders the Septuagint's addition unnecessary. Either way, what follows next is an infinitive construct of means, describing how Israel is to show its love for Yahweh. Laleketh badachau ulishmor watsawothau wakukothau wayishmapathau, by walking in his ways and by keeping his commandments, his statutes, and his judgments. The next phrase, then, is a final clause or a result clause, introduced simply, as it commonly is in Hebrew, with the conjunction. Wahayitha, waravitha, waberakha Yahweh Eloheka be'eretz asher atava shama lorishta. Then you will live and become numerous, and Yahweh your God will bless you in the land which you are about to enter to possess. The second verb here, waravitha, is a call while consecutive perfect, second masculine singular, from the root resh, beth, hey, rava, to increase or multiply or become numerous. Toward the end of the verse, the verb form va is a call participle. I've translated it with what grammarians might call incipient force, since the participle in Hebrew is frequently used to indicate action that is about to happen, as the context suggests is the case here. With Moses speaking about what the Israelites are preparing to do. Verse 17. Va'im yifne levavaka v'lo tishma. But if your heart turns away so that you do not obey, the clause begins by stating a condition. If your heart turns, or perhaps in the context, turns away or turns aside. And then follows with the result clause introduced by the conjunction and. Here would translate, so that you do not hear or obey. The next clause. Wanidachta, wahishtachwitha, lelohim acherim, waavad pam. Here the first verb, wanidachta, is a nifal, while consecutive perfect, second masculine singular, from the first nun root, nun daleth chet, nadach. In the nifal, this verb means to allow yourself to be led astray or to be seduced. I've chosen the latter phrase, be seduced, because the Old Testament frequently employs the image of seduction or adultery to characterize the faithlessness of Israel. Verse 18. Higadti lakim hayom ki avod tovedun. I declare to you today that you will utterly perish. Most English translations handle the infinitive absolute avoth by employing the sense of the certainty of the action and translate something like, you will surely perish. And that's quite a common use of the infinitive absolute in Hebrew. Given the context, however, and especially about what is said in the next clause, I've chosen to translate this infinitive absolute with the sense of something to be done to its fullest extent, which is also a recognized but less common use of the Hebrew infinitive absolute. Either one will work here, but I believe making the emphasis on the extent of their destruction fits the context a little better. Either way, we'll put a period here and continue by beginning a new sentence in English. Lo ta'rikun yamim ahadama asher ata over et hayarden lavo shama larishta. Your days will not be long upon the land which you are crossing the Jordan to enter there to possess it. The last phrase of this sentence, the relative clause mentioning their crossing the Jordan and entering the land, is a little clumsy in English if we are overly literal in translating the Hebrew. The problem arises because the relative pronoun, asher, is not declinable in Hebrew. So the speaker typically uses what we would call a resumptive pronoun on the last word of the phrase, to indicate the function of the relative clause. This is perfectly good Hebrew, but it's difficult English. In English, we would probably say simply, which you are crossing the Jordan to enter and possess. Verse 19. Ha'idothi bakim hayom eth hashamayim wa eth ha'aretz ha'chayim wa hamawath nathati lefanecha ha'bracha wa hachlala. I call the heavens and earth as a witness against you today, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and curse. The verse begins with a Hithiel perfect, first common singular, from the hollow root ayin wow daleth, ud. This word most often means either to be a witness or to call someone to serve as a witness. In this case, the verb is given an object, the heavens and earth. As a result, the meaning to call someone to serve as witness fits better. The next phrase, starting with wahamaweth, begins with a conjunction. However, translating this as the simple conjunction and or but doesn't do justice to the sense here, because what follows, I have set before you life and death, blessing and curse, is the issue about which the witnesses are to testify. So we need to translate the conjunction in such a way as to make that relationship clear. In English, we can do that by translating the conjunction with the word that. So we would end up with something like, I call the heavens and earth as a witness that I have set before you. The implications of this situation are spelled out in the next clause. U vakarta bakhayim lama'an tichye ata wazer echa. So choose life in order that you and your descendants may live. The first verb is a wow consecutive perfect from the root beth chet resh, bachar. The question is, with what kind of force should we translate this wow consecutive perfect? Several grammars point out that in some contexts, the wow consecutive perfect takes on the force of a mood other than the indicative, like the subjunctive or optative, for example. You can see this in Walt K. O'Connor's grammar in section 32.2.3, or in Davidson's grammar, section 39D, and elsewhere. We are accustomed to see this kind of usage with the imperfect. Here's a good example of that same usage in the wow consecutive perfect. We might translate this, you should choose life, or you ought to choose life. But in the context of this exhortation, translating this perfect with the force of an imperative seems to be the most straightforward option. So I've translated, so choose life in order that you and your descendants may live. Verse 20. La'ahava et Yahweh Eloheka lishmoa bekol u'lava kachvo. By loving Yahweh your God, by obeying his voice, and clinging to him. There are three infinitive constructs in this clause. Ahava, love, shemoa, hear or obey, and vavaka, cling to. Each of these is prefixed with the preposition lamed. What we have here are additional examples of what we saw earlier in the passage, in the use of the infinitive construct with lamed to specify the means by which an action is carried out. In this case, the admonition of Moses is, choose life by loving, and by listening to, and by clinging to. This exhortation is followed by an explanation, in which Moses gives the reasons that Israel should love and listen to and cling to Yahweh. first. Ki hu chayeka wa orek yamecha, for he is your life and the length of your days. Here, the gospel-oriented nature of this exhortation is made clear. Now, in the distinction between gospel and law, this is clearly law. It calls upon, this whole verse, I mean, is law, in that it calls upon Israel to do something. It puts a burden on them. But the context makes it clear that the point of this is not that Israel should obey God out of the desire to earn God's favor or from fear of punishment, but in the first instance, because it recognizes that Yahweh is himself the life of the people of God. As we said before, the historical and literary context is that this passage follows the redemption of Israel. So Moses is teaching Israel what it means to be the people of God. This is what we sometimes call the third function of the law, the teaching function of the law, and it assumes a gospel context, as this passage does. This is followed by a second reason to choose life in Yahweh, a hope that is rooted in the promises that God made to their ancestors. Lasheveth al ha'adama asher nishba Yahweh avotecha la'Avraham la'Yitzach u'la'Yaakov la'teth lahem. To live upon the land that Yahweh swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give to them. This finishes our look at the Hebrew text. But before we wrap up, we should add just a few observations about preaching this text. First, and most importantly, we need to note that a passage like this one is easily and often misunderstood. This text is not suggesting that Israel will be saved through good works, that is to say, that it will be saved by obedience to the law. It is critical to read this passage in its proper historical and literary context. Moses is speaking to a people that is already the people of God. They have become the people of God by the saving grace of God alone, by the undeserved love of God that delivered them from the oppression that they had experienced in Egypt. What Moses is giving them is teaching about what it means to live as the people of God. The point is this: true faith loves God. True faith hears his word. True faith desires and seeks to be faithful to what God teaches in his word. This faithful hearing and seeking to follow God's word and obey his teaching does not earn us God's favor. That was given to Israel and is given to us by God's gracious mercy alone. But it is, as the New Testament also describes it, the genuine fruit of faith. And so in this passage, Moses exhorts Israel to be faithful, so that their lives will bear the fruit of true faith. By challenging them to choose life, Moses encourages them to allow the light of God to shine through them and enlighten the darkness of the world of death. And he reminds them of the promises that God made to our ancestors and still makes to us, that God will bless his faithful people. I'm Dr. David Adams, thanking you for joining us for this week's lectionary at lunch, as we have examined the exhortation of Moses in Deuteronomy chapter 30, verses 15 to 20.